This is CliffCentral.com. Fashion Lab on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the Fashion Lab. My name is Liz Ogumbo-Regisford, your host, and thank you for tuning in to the Fashion Lab once again. Now, this is where we dissect the business behind fashion, and today we're going to be talking and touching base on the current situ on the ethical fashion conversations within Africa and beyond. We are definitely going to be joined by a very special guest who I'll also be introducing shortly. Now, according to the Ethical Fashion Forum, which is definitely an umbrella term to describe ethical fashion, we can define it in so many ways. A lot of people say, what is ethical fashion? Ethical fashion would include the design, production, retail, and purchasing. It covers a wide range of issues such as working conditions, exploitation, fair trade, sustainable production, the environment, and definitely also touches on animal welfare. Now, according to an article I came across on fashionhedge.com, the rise of fast fashion and media coverage of inhumane corporate practices have actually spanned a debate around today's fashion industry and the sustainability of the business model. So the terms ethical fashion, sustainable fashion, some people call it eco-fashion, describe an industry that actually emerged as an alternative to mass-produced clothing. And this is where the consumer has little or no visibility about environmental and labor corporate practices. So increasing consumer concerns have definitely led to many global corporations to disclose the location of their factories, publish annual sustainability reports, but there are different opinions about what is really ethical and what it means in this context. I'm not going to kiss and tell because we definitely have a guest who will be joining us who's also very, very alert and aware of what this means, what they're doing to be able to change the name of the game and still play in a very ethical way. So I want to go straight into introducing our contributors. We're joined by Edgy Benson, who also runs NU New York with his Echoes from New York. Edgy, welcome to the show.
How are you, Liz?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm good.
What are you wearing and who made your clothes? And should I talk about your shirt and then so we can just move on? Like, can we just talk about what you're wearing on the upper part of your body? top half.
Man. Yeah, maybe you're right. But today I'm wearing Diesel, but I'm wearing a green skinny Diesel from a new collection.
I already said, because I want to let our listeners know what you're wearing on the bottom. What are you wearing on the top, Edge? So we can move to Fran.
I'm wearing a short winter jacket from Ari Soho. And a cardigan.
Well, welcome to the show, Edgy.
Today.
It's good to...
Because it's cold out here.
It's good to have you on the show. It's good to hear your voice. Thank you for your consistency. And welcome again to the show. Now, we are also joined by our contributor, Francisca Marzilli, all the way from Lisbon with her Echoes from Europe. Welcome to the show, Francisca.
Hello, Liz.
Hello there.
fresh air has come. Also here, autumn is officially started, and I'm wearing today boots, black boots, black skirt, and a black shirt with a black cardigan, and an orange knitted scarf, but knitted by me. I want to point at this. It's a very fine gauge, so it took 3 years to make it, but
really
now it's here in my neck.
You know what? Well, welcome to the show, Francisca. You sound a bit vibrant, which is good, despite the weather or the season change. But welcome and thank you for joining us once again. It's always good to have you guys.
Thank you.
Now, for those of you who are tuned in, just a quick reminder to you, my favorite segment at the end of the show is called Who Would You Want to Dress and Why? So feel free to share with us your who's and your why's, because that is our wind down session. Now, keep your tweets coming. We are on Fashion Lab AF on Twitter. We are on Fashion Lab Africa on Instagram and Facebook. Share with us your thoughts. We definitely want to hear from you. Now, before we plug in our special guest, Edgy and Francisca, I hope that you're excited about this topic today, because even though we touch base on this, it's so important to continue to just kind of have this conversation once every few months to also just kind of remind us where we are going and how we are going to where we are going, or our final destination. So I'm very excited to be able to have this conversation today. And I would just love to share your overall thoughts on kind of, you know, for you, Francisca, from a European perspective, what's going on there, the conscience around just people being a bit more ethical in the way that they play and trade. And then, Edgy, I'd love to hear your two cents before we bring in our guest for today's show.
Yes.
Go ahead, Francis.
From a European point of view, today was approved the anti-dumping normative approved with 554 votes in favor, 48 votes against, and 80 abstentions to avoid unfair competition. It was a great day for a united Europe, even if possibly very late, because it's late, but it's better late than never.
Yes.
And I can say that as Italian, I have a double nationality, so as Italian, I am a bit disappointed because of this late approval. But from a Portuguese point of view, I'm very excited because it matches in timing exactly this positive wave that invested the Portugal manufacturers in fashion. So I have a double state of mind. I have an ambivalent state of mind. So,
well, thank you for that. I was going to say to you, thank you for
good
that.
New, but new.
Yeah, thank you for that. Francisca, one thing I'll always say is progress is better than being stagnant. So for me, my thing is I always say that
Absolutely.
Even if it's late, we still, let's just be excited about it. Maybe after the show, I'll get you some wine and cheer you up, okay? And then for Edgy, Edgy, what's your two cents around this topic before we get really deep? With our special guest today.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm just excited that we are speaking about it from an African perspective today. I mean, with someone who is actually doing it in Africa. Mm-hmm. In Africa. So at least Africans can see that it's doable, that Africa is actually a place where it's also happening. I'm a little bit disappointed. I'm proud of Europe. But I mean, in Africa and in the US right now, everything is stepping back, you know, like everything that was done to protect the environment, which in effect affects how fashion is produced, or informs how we produce fashion, how we treat people in the industry. All of those things have been stepped back. The US is stepping away from all the things that encourage ethical fashion, in a sense, you know. So it's a bit shameful from this perspective, and I'm proud of Europe. But the industry per se here is working very hard to make sure that, I mean, whether it's staff welfare or sustainability in the way that we treat production and how we relate to the environment in what we do. I mean, the industry on its own is working very hard. So I'm happy on that part.
Let's be happy.
Let's all be happy. According to an article by an ethical fashion champion, her name is Safiya Maini. She actually talks about what retailers should be doing more, the impact of Modern Slavery Act and the importance of a fair supply chain. Now, when she was asked why creating ethical supply chains is so important, and obviously for those who are still thinking, why are we still dwelling on this topic? She says, we know supply chains are actually complicated, but if retailers can invest in segmented customer databases to maximize profits, then obviously we see no reason to make sure, I mean, they can do the same, find out how people are being treated at different points in their supply chains. So I think affordable technology is changing things for garment workers. With a cheap smartphone, it's now possible for a worker to take a photograph of unsafe working conditions, send it to a trade union, and obviously that prevents what we had to deal with, like the Rana Plaza collapse in 2013. Now, if you think you can get away with murder today and you're in this industry and you're sitting there sipping on your wine or whatever you're doing right now, you're definitely living in a dream, because you need to ask Zara what happened when workers slipped in those things. And now you can see that you don't even have to, you can run, but you can't hide. If a worker slips those things in, that's your name. It's done. It's finished. It's a wrap. It's finished. Now are for you, like they say in Nigeria. But anyway, I want to come back to introduce our special guest, who is co-founder and CEO of Ethical Apparel Africa. She definitely brings over 20 years of experience in sourcing, merchandising, retail operations while living and working on three continents. Now, she started her career at Marks & Spencer, followed by 17 years at George, and then the third largest clothing retailer in the UK, now owned by Walmart. Now, she's launched and led George's Bangladesh sourcing office and managed annual exports. She's also developed and implemented a lean efficiency program with George partner factories that have actually lowered the cost of goods, improved factory profitability, also enabled higher take-home pay for workers. Now, her experience obviously includes a lot. She's worked internationally with the fair trade artisan textiles industry and also obviously developed factories in Africa for mass production. Allow me to welcome to the show founder and CEO of Ethical Apparel Africa, Karen Pybus. Am I pronouncing this well or did I kill it?
100%. Okay. You get full marks there. Thank you very much for the introduction.
Welcome. Hi. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Welcome, Karen.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you all.
And thank you for joining us. Karen, before you think you're exempt on this one, what are you wearing and who made your clothes before we get into the real talk?
I am wearing a lot of jumpers. I am currently in the north of England and it is very cold.
Okay, we normally say feel creative enough, and if you decide to change what you're wearing as we continue to flow in the show, feel free to. This is a creative industry where we roll with the creative flow. But anyway, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Now, Karen, can we just start by talking about your need to feel or to be involved in fashion from a more conscious level, other than a lot of other players are doing today?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it, over all the years of experience of working in the industry, I've always struggled with this thing of how do you get the most amount of money to the workers that are actually making the goods so that they can have fair wages for what they are doing. And there are so many steps in the supply chain, from a buyer making a decision down to a worker making the goods. And trying to understand, like, what really is ethical manufacturing? And, you know, that's more than just passing a base code, paying minimum wages, making sure a working place is safe. But what is true ethical manufacturing? And whilst I was working in Bangladesh, I think one of the things that really struck me was how much waste there is still in the processes, from everything from communications and the way that the brands operate, buyers changing their minds, the last minute lead times getting crunched, all the way through to inefficiencies within the factory setting. And that factories can sit around and say, you know, unless the brands pay more money for things, then we can't do this, this, and this. But actually, I think that factories have got a responsibility themselves to create an environment that enables them to pay those fair wages and have empowerment programs and create the best place to work for their workers as well. So I guess I kind of took the challenge of what if ethical manufacturing, how I term it, so paying living wages and creating the best place to work and worker empowerment programs, should be the normal way of doing things, not the exemption. And how do you get to that process? And that's what I've kind of set about trying to achieve through setting up Ethical Apparel Africa.
It's very cool. I think now what I saw, obviously, is I've seen your team has experience in manufacturing in Mauritius, Bangladesh, China, Cambodia, Malaysia, Vietnam, South Africa, and Madagascar. Tell me what sets, or tell us what sets these manufacturing markets apart, because obviously I'm sure there's different, the reason you have all of these different markets and how they play and how they trade, there's got to be some difference in it. So I'm just curious about what sets these markets apart, and then what value does this, you know, the vast manufacturing experiences from all of these different markets, how does it add value to what you guys are doing or how you're contributing to the fashion value chain?
Okay, so we picked Africa specifically because I've got a personal connection. I lived in Tanzania when I was 18. I lived in Joburg for a couple of years whilst working for Massmart. And I'm just really passionate about the continent and particularly around the people. And what I've found in factories in South Africa and in East and West Africa is a real desire, particularly from African owners, to want to do things differently and want to work to create great environments and want to empower workers as they've gone along. So we've taken that as our kind of base, trying to create something different rather than trying to change a system that already exists. But one of the things that holds African manufacturing back is its efficiency levels compared with the big manufacturing countries like Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, India, China. The things just don't go down the line as fast enough, as fast as and as an efficient way as those countries. And that's where the competitive edge they need to increase. So by bringing in experts, particularly from countries that have understood where an industry started and where it's gone to, and being able to help factories get to a point where how do you make a process more efficient? And this isn't about workers, you know, busting a gut to work three times faster than they're working now. It's about putting processes in that enable things to be able to be made faster. So where's your cutting in relation to your sewing? When you're sitting on the machine and you're sewing a care label in, are you having to turn around at 90 degrees to find the care label, to put it down to where your needle point is to actually put it in? Or is there a way that that's right close to your needle point? Every 2 seconds saved on every single thing mounts up to being able to make that product faster at the end of the day. So being able to bring experts in from around the world that have worked in environments where they've had to do that to compete brings that level of expertise and understanding to those African factories.
Wow, it's very good. Edgy, Francisca, do you have any input? I have a question.
I have a question for the Karen. How can we define the ethical apparel Africa as the union, institution, certification? How can we define it?
We are an ethical sourcing agency. I didn't want to set up a consultancy that just went into factories and helped factories to develop. Because for me, then when you walk away, if that factory doesn't have orders going through it, or you can make something look beautiful and you can put all these programs on, but if they haven't got orders and mass production orders going through it, if they're just making small quantities or stuff for the local market, they're never going to be able to really deliver on job creation and sustainable jobs. So by being a sourcing agent, what we do is one side of our business brings orders from international brands. So we find brands that want to manufacture in Africa or want to manufacture more ethically or want to take advantage of AGOA, the trade agreement with the US, whatever. And we match those to the right factories with the right skill sets. We specifically work in West Africa. And on the other side, we are then developing factories. So we take factories and we work alongside them. We're in those factories every single day, working alongside them, developing their technical skills, developing their social compliance and everything else. And in much more of a deep way than a lot of sourcing agents would do, to get them ready to be able to make that international order.
It's a very a huge role
to take
commitment.
Big pants.
Yes, because we make this activity agency of sourcing in Portugal and between Portugal and Italy mostly. And I see that it's a very, very incredible amount of things to do. From the research of the right company, the monitoring, how do they work, if they deliver well, how do they behave in the course of the production, and in the end, if they have credit to buy the right the right fabrics, and if they can support, for instance, a late payment, it's an important thing to think about, to be concerned about when you make this kind of activity. So. Good luck. Congratulations, mostly congratulations for this.
Yes. Thank you. It is a huge task. I am so grateful for the incredible people that have come to work with us from all of those countries. You know, they work so hard and they're so passionate about the vision of trying to create factories where the workers' voice and their skills are respected within that working environment. These are not easy countries to operate and live in, but the people make the difference.
Yes.
I was going to say, like, to Karen, it's such an aspirational thing what she's doing, because I think what Africa needs is just improving these efficiencies, you know. I mean, for us working like in China and in Indonesia and different countries, you see these efficiencies, and they're not just driven by they're actually not driven by people's desire to be ethically correct, you know, in the way that they produce, but they are mostly driven by the customers have grown to just enforce, like, they want to know that what they are buying is produced in a fair way. And it's informing the way manufacturers are also operating, you know. So, but in Africa, a lot of these things are not going through, you know. They're not seeping through the works, so that to the part where people actually can feel it. So, for her to be doing what she's doing in Africa, it's aspirational, and it's really going to help in terms of increasing efficiencies and just the little minute things that people miss out, that people think don't affect the way the product turns out, like just having everything set, arranged in such a way that work flows very well. All of those things, I mean, you save time, and when the worker can go home early, it all improves their life. So it's really cool. I'm thankful for what she's doing.
So Karen, another question I'm just curious about. Do you actually think that Africa has the efficiency today to take over what Asia has been doing for years and years and years? And if you do so, what do we see? Where do we see the future of this? Are we looking at like a 10-year mark? Or because obviously it's going to take a lot of time and resources to be able to make sure that we set certain things into place to be able to make sure that this is actually the hub and the manufacturing hub that's taking over the world.
Absolutely. I think it very much depends on the model in the factory that are being put in. And it is definitely a marathon, not a sprint. I would say that to get the best long-term objective and to really make that change, it's a more of a slow build, but there are factories that are being brought up in Ethiopia where the expectation is that they will very fast get up to the same efficiency levels. Most of those factories are foreign owned and invested, so I think it depends on the model you've got. It also depends on the volume of business that's going through that factory. The more core consistency products that you can put in, the better. We have a factory in Benin that we work with that makes shirts, and one of their biggest clients is actually making clergy shirts for the American market, which are fantastic because they are black with a white tab collar. They don't change in terms of fashion, and we can just make them, you know, all year round as consistency. There's complexity in them in terms of the number of sizes they come in. But from a core product, that is an underlying product which will help to keep that factory going, whilst they are also making fashion shirts currently for the UK market on top, which obviously come in and out from a production point of view. So their efficiency will end up being much better on the core clergy shirt than it will be on the fashion shirts.
So what are some of the brands that you're working with right now? And are you looking to encourage more brands to actually get their manufacturing set up and done in Africa, or is it just that, you know, you just care about trading and playing in an ethical way, so it doesn't matter if it's in Cambodia or if it's in Africa or if it's wherever? What's your sentiment around
So we are Ethical Apparel Africa. We're only operational in Africa, and currently as a business we're only operational in Ghana and Benin. I think there's other huge opportunities for West Africa, in Cote d'Ivoire, Senegal, potentially even Nigeria in the future. And I think that for me, West Africa is still dominated by African-owned factories, and we only work with African-owned factories, and because that's where we see the potential and that's where we see the ethical focus particularly. There's a huge amount of countries in Africa. It's a huge continent and lots of places that we can go in the future as well, with an industry that can really help people to get out of poverty. One of our key focuses is the American market because of the AGOA agreement. It means that you can buy from Africa into America and save between 16 and 30% on duty, depending on the product type that you are buying, compared with other making in other countries around the world. So that's a huge opportunity for Africa to compete whilst they're developing their efficiency levels up, because you've got a price advantage straight away. So we're working with brands in the States, from fashion brands like Brooklyn Industries in New York to core brands like Hurley's Religious Goods, which make all the clergy wear. Obviously, most of my network has been from the UK and from where I've worked there. So working with brands in the UK as well. But we are duty free going into the UK, but so are many, many countries going into the UK duty free. So from a competition point of view, it's slightly harder to compete on price to start with. The other opportunity is for Africa is really to develop its textile business, which is a much bigger challenge because the costs involved in setting a textile business up are much higher than setting a sewing factory up. But something like 85% of Africa's cotton gets exported out of Africa, rather than being converted within Africa, due to lack of ginners and spinners and weavers and knitters within the country, because you need such a massive investment to do that well now and be able to compete on that side. But I'm really excited about how if we can generate enough manufacturing industry that requires enough fabric, that there's enough then for somebody to be coming in and saying, like they are already doing in Ethiopia, let's put up some of these plants.
Wow.
You're totally right.
it's everything is sinking because it's
I think
it's
that's
very...
what we've always been saying.
Go ahead, Edgy.
No, I think that's the conversation we've had on the show several times about how fashion can attract outside investors by just proving that the volume is there, that it's worthwhile to have this investment, that the capacity is there for growth, you know? I do think that eventually this will happen. I mean, with all that amount of cotton that we produce, and with companies like Blisco and the rest really active in Africa, I think it's a matter of time before we can get to the point where we actually have these plants in Africa themselves.
Wow.
Silence.
Yes, it's a lot to absorb. I mean, just basic facts like 85% of our cotton getting exported just makes you wonder what else is happening and how fast we can flip things around, because obviously we don't have to prove that there is capacity for growth. That's a sign.
The key
but
thing
I don't know though. Go ahead.
The key thing for a textile producer is they need to know that the investment, which is millions and millions of dollars, is that there's enough manufacturing locally to use up the fabric that they are making, basically.
Yeah.
And yes. So, we need to focus on developing that manufacturing industry Yeah, if you look at what's happened in Ethiopia, they've had a fast growth of the manufacturing industry. And so because the government has supported it so well, you know, there's a key link there for me between the electricity subsidies the government's done, the logistics that they're putting into that to that country to really help kickstart, and welcoming big brands such as H&M and PVH in there to partner with them to build industrial parks and those kind of things. It's a good model from a government intervention point of view.
I think that's the point I was trying to make. Like, what is it, how discernible is the relationship between the infrastructure we have, the designers and investors, you know? Because this link has to be there. Investors can see, you know, there's enough capacity here, there's enough design activity, and there's enough reason to increase or to invest in the infrastructure, because the design activities, the market activity is there. Sometimes I feel like there's a disconnect between these chains in Africa. And if the investors don't see opportunity, they're not going to come in. You know, I do feel like on our side, as players in the industry, we do have to have, like, we do have to have a need, you know, like a visible need for investors. Sometimes we hide it, we don't say anything, and people don't come in, you know. But the activity is, there's enough activity for investors to come in and help us.
Yeah, I was going to say the manufacturing locally, that's a bit of a challenge, not a challenge, but it's something to just think about. And we have to figure out as an industry how we're going to make it work, because the truth of the matter is, again, if we cannot be able to, if the manufacturing locally is not able to handle all this, that's why we have a lot of exports. But then how do we, as the African fashion industry, be able to start locking this in place, you know? Because I just think that generally when we look at manufacturing and how much manufacturing happens locally, we've got a lot of brands in the continent who are building, but I still think that a lot of brands are actually producing in such low quantities that I don't know how big we're going to move and how fast to be able to get to that level. At the end of the day, if you don't have a big demand, how are you going to overproduce? Why are you going to overproduce? So I'm just a bit like, I feel stuck just thinking about what brands are here. There are brands obviously who are constantly producing, but then what about the units? And if we want to keep this circulating as well to be able to really help develop the economy and keep everything locked and moving around, then how are we going to do this?
The units are there, though. Remember, we have the AGOA initiative, which, so if a company like Gap or Old Navy is producing their denims in Africa and they come here without the taxes, the duties they are paying, getting them out of China. I mean, that's numbers.
But that's,
you know?
Gap.
So
that's,
the numbers
that's,
are there.
That's Gap. That's not Rubicon. Yeah. That's Gap.
Yeah, but I mean, we're not going to produce only for ourselves. We're going to produce a lot of it outside, you know? Like just what Karen was just saying, they are making these clergy garments that are coming to America, you know? That's we can't just produce for Africa. The whole idea is to be that competitive that anybody can produce with us. It doesn't matter where they live, you know, where the companies come from, you know? But without infrastructure, we can't do that, you know?
I think that in this, the big challenge is really this, the infrastructures. African continent needs this. And I think that everything you do in Africa is slower, moves slower, is more, you don't have the facilities you have in the USA or in Europe.
But it's not
simply
it's not,
the connections, the transports. I think it's a very long way to do.
But it's not just the hard infrastructure, though. Soft infrastructure, like what Karen is doing, that's soft infrastructure, providing the knowledge and the efficiency. That is something that we can add. You know, it doesn't have to be hard infrastructure, electricity, roads, whatever, but it can be soft infrastructure like knowledge and creating efficiencies, those kinds of things.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway. I think it's also looking at countries like Bangladesh that, you know, in 30 to 40 years have really developed an industry from pretty much nothing with no local market. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything they make is basically from export. And yet we've got the advantage in Africa of a growing local market and growing retail markets, and that the inter-country trade needs to also, you know, step up in certain areas as well, plus then the export market. And if you look at things like AGOA being able to add that, it's really down to how can you convince brands to come to Africa and to take that risk of moving to a new continent to make, and what are the measures that you can put into place to help that. And I think that's where, you know, the Ethiopian government has done a good job in terms of working alongside the brands and effectively underwriting the risk by being committed to the industry, and I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, I still think that Africa definitely is still one of the fastest growing regions in the world, and we are growing either way. So I think that everything's going to fall into place as we move and as we are conscious about it. I think the ethical conversation is still very exciting for me. And I think, Karen, one of the things I'm just curious about, where do you see the future of Africa when it comes to manufacturing and when it just comes to being that hub? That you know, we've got all these eyeballs on Africa now. Where do you see the future for African fashion?
From an African manufacturing point of view, I don't see any reason why it won't be competing on the world stage from a manufacturing perspective. Everything, all of the composite base parts are there for it to be able to do that. And the only thing that, you know, there shouldn't be anything that would stop that happening. But I do think it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And if you try and do it too quickly and you mess up and you ruin that relationship with the brand, then they will be burnt and they won't come back again easily. So it is about building slowly. You know, with all our brands that we work with, we encourage them to trial first of all. Yeah, they're like, we want to give you 50,000 pieces. That's great. But give me 5,000 to start with. Let me try it. Let me prove it. Let me go forward with it. Mm-hmm. And that's why, honestly, I'm focused on not high fashion in what we're doing, because there's too much risk in that. There's too much fit critical. There's too much change that happens all the time. There's too much change from a buyer's point of view. Actually, let's start them off with core products that they're, you know, we're focusing on workwear, uniforms, corporate wear, things that they have made for the local market that actually they can make for export, and a you know, being able to source really good fabrics from outside the country's continent to be able to do that is key. But start slowly, build your relationships, and don't try and dive in too quickly.
Karen, what would you say are your key points for some of those people who are still wondering, how do we position every day? You have a new brand saying, I'm sustainable or I'm ethical. Could you just redefine, according to Karen, what are some of these key points that sets a business or brand apart and puts you under that category? Because I feel like the word ethical was abused a long time and has still been abused. Eco-fashion, you know, you've got everyone up the street talking about, yeah, they're eco-friendly, you know. So could you just share with us, as an expert on this conversation, what sort of key points would position a brand, you know, business as ethical?
Absolutely. This is my personal view, and how I look at what I'm purchasing is that, for me, a brand that is manufacturing out overseas or even within the country, you know, the British clothing industry has had its fair share of issues from a manufacturing point of view. But you need to be on the ground or have a trusted partner that is on the ground all the time, that can be walking into those factories every single day unannounced, and to see what's going on, and to develop that level of trust with those factories so that they don't need to go off and subcontract. They don't need to behave badly with their workers and those kind of things. So having somebody on the ground, either their own people or a trusted agent like ourselves, that is actually in and out of the factories all day, monitoring exactly what's going on is a key thing for me in terms of how that is. And then partnering with that factory on development programs that are right for the right factory for the right place. You know, everybody says to me, oh, you're working in Africa, you must have an HIV program in your factories. And I say, actually, no, because we're in West Africa. And thankfully, the HIV prevalence is actually pretty low in West Africa. But malaria is a really big issue. And malaria will be my biggest issue from an absenteeism point of view. So there's, you know, my focus needs to be on putting malaria prevention programs in specifically in the countries that I'm working in, as a priority. So it's making sure that what you're doing in those factories is relevant to those workers, and that you're not just putting something in because you think, oh, it's a everybody needs a women's literacy program, without actually checking whether the women are literate already. You know, in West Africa, most of the factories we work with are actually run by women and owned by women, very empowered women. And you know, I don't have a male dominant environment from a factory management mm-hmm. point of view. So it's about finding the right things for the right factories in the right place and being on the ground, I would say.
It's good for those who are tuned in.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I have one more question about the monitoring topic mm-hmm. for the caring. With the today approval from the European Parliament, Commission will observe in loco the companies and their way to manage the processes of production. I ask, would you see in your future to have an agreement with the European Parliament to support this activity of monitoring in loco for African suppliers?
I haven't read that report specifically, so I'd have to go and look at it. We are always looking for partnerships in that sense. I think a lot of factories suffer from audit fatigue, with many people, many different brands all wanting different audits. I remember going to one factory that had 3 fire extinguishers on one wall, all at different levels. And I said, you know, why have you got 3 fire extinguishers in there? And they said, well, because the different brands determine that the fire extinguishers need to be put on the walls at different levels. And so instead of trying to move the fire extinguisher around every time we have an audit, we just put 3 fire extinguishers up instead because it's easier. Then we know we'll pass the audit. And, it, you know, just ridiculous things like that. And so our approach is that auditing and that kind of thing needs to be about continuous assessment. We have a very, very comprehensive, detailed assessment that we go through with the factories, and a corrective action plan that works on every single point, but also gives them a vision of where they can get to on each element of that, right down to, you know, offering water, filtered water for people to drink, through to, you know, how wages are paid, et cetera, et cetera. But we're currently working with the Social and Labour Convergence Project, which is trying to get brands together to look at a different way of assessing factories that is based on trust, where factories submit what they are doing, and then that is then verified by the assessor, as opposed to the assessor's kind of tick box auditing and saying yes, no, fail, pass, and is a much more progressive way at looking at improvements within factories, and working with factories on the ground and partnering with them to improve so they can see why they're doing things, rather than creating canteens for people because that's what somebody's decided to do, when actually 80% of the workforce go home for lunchtime because they live close by.
Guys, it's been such a very great conversation, a lot of insights, a lot of information as well. Karen, we really appreciate you joining us as well to just share with us what you guys are doing and where you see us going as a continent in this beautiful industry. For those who are tuned in, we've been speaking ethical fashion, and we've been joined by Karen Pybus, and we've just been talking about, you know, what's ethical. I mean, think about sustainable processes when it comes to your fabrication as a brand. I mean, and think about it also that after oil, the fashion industry is the second largest polluter in this environment. So you have to be a bit conscious, think about your the workers' wages, think about, you know, sustainability that also comes and plays in each stage of a garment's life. You know, things like organic cotton, which a lot of brands are still using. People don't know that, you know, organic cotton is grown with, like, I mean, real cotton is grown with so much harsh pesticides. And when you flip and think about your organic cotton, then you're definitely doing so much, much good. So I think it's just about your conscience. It's about your research. It's about understanding what you're doing, how, what you're using, the chemicals that are going into your processes. Think about the ethical side. Think about the people and the workers you work for. There's so many things to think about. So I think it's also about us having these conversations to give some insight, and then hoping that when you go back to your base, or when you go back to your work program, you can actually be a bit more conscious and just think about how to play and how to trade better, especially ethically. So anyway, Karen, how can our listeners connect with you? Website, social media handles?
So our website is www.ethicalapparelafrica.com. If anybody's interested in manufacturing in West Africa, we have a minimum order quantity of 500 pieces because we are trying to work at that bulk end in that sense. And my Twitter handle is at Karen Long, which is my previous name. Not quite ever worked out how to change it.
Yeah, some of these platforms, so cool. Yeah, some of these platforms don't allow you to change, but you know, it's really been a nice opportunity to connect with you, Karen. We wish you all the best. Congratulations on what you're doing. You definitely have taken responsibility and put on the big pants that not everyone are able to put on. And before we wind up on this show, we've got our beautiful last segment called Who Would You Want to Dress and Why? Ting-a-ling-a-ling. So, yeah, there you go. So we're going to start with Francisca. Who would you want to dress and why? And we'll take it around.
Today, I would like to dress to make the wardrobe entirely of the... how to name it? The first lady of the USA. Because it's not Melania Trump. It's not because... she's badly dressed, but because she should use U.S. labels. I saw her in a Gucci dress and in China, and she should be the first ambassador
This is really hard.
Fashion.
This is very hard. I'm now starting to sympathize with Melania. But anyway, thank you for that. Edgy, who would you want to dress?
I forgot the name.
Edgy, who would you want to dress and why?
I am so stuck at Melania Trump. I lost my thoughts. So I don't know. I'm not so sure who I want to dress now because I'm just so lost at the moment.
Okay, well, we will go straight to Karen. Karen, who would you want to dress and why, given the opportunity?
That's a really hard question. I'm a manufacturer. I'm definitely not a stylist. I probably need to learn to dress myself, first of all, before I offered anybody else any styling tips. So maybe the thing for you guys is actually to dress me. Rather than
see, Karen just solved my problem.
Yeah, there you go. I saw you were struggling there, so you know
you can dress her.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well,
I would want to dress two people. Now I'm going to dress Karen so she can learn how to dress other people. That's one reason for sure. And then I'm interested in dressing again. I've done this before, but Isabella Dos Santos, I would definitely want to dress her. This is a woman who's been deemed Africa's richest woman. She's an Angolan businesswoman.
Yeah.
And yesterday, I just first of all want to wish all the Angolans happy Independence Day, because I mean, for anyone to pull out Madame Dos Santos out of place and displace things,
yes,
the way they did,
awesome.
I think the president of the current president of Angola is not even playing. So I want to dress Isabella, hoping that I could dress her in some sustainable fashion on her way out, and maybe it would inspire a new business model for her too. Something else to do besides being in the positions that she's been in. But anyway, It's been a fantastic show. For those who are listening, we are on fashionlabafrica.com. Reach out to us at info@fashionlabafrica.com if you want to share your thoughts, if you want certain subject matters to be dissected in our lab here, or whatever it is that you want. But Francisca, we definitely appreciate your presence in the house. Thank you for joining us. Edgy, we also appreciate your presence. And for those who are at home, be safe, do what you need to do, and just think about playing in 2018 in a different way. Think ethical, and hopefully we can save the world. Otherwise, it is peace and love until next week. CliffCentral.com.